Welcome back to another Queen City Press podcast preview show. I'm Laurel Failer, and I'm joined as usual by Tyler Snipes. And yeah, it's another busy week with two games coming up for FC Cincinnati. They're coming off one of their best matches in the Nuna era last Thursday, beating Tigres 3-0 in Champions Cup. And then one of its worst games, I would say, Sunday when they fell 3-1 at New England. I recapped those games on the Insider show, but it's hard to go into these next two games without talking about the state of the team. So we'll discuss that a little bit on this show as we look ahead to the Champions Cup round of 16 finale at Tigres on Thursday and CF Montreal at home on Sunday. We'll be bringing in MLS on Apple TV play-by-play announcer Nate Bucati, who has been with us before. He'll join us to help break down these two matches. But Tyler, what do you make of this team so far and all the highs and lows within this last 8-day span?
I really don't know what to make. And obviously we'll get into some of this with Nate, but one thing I guess you and I can talk about beforehand would be, do you feel like there's an asterisk on the Tigres game just because of their travel issues and all that? Like when you say it's like one of their, you know, biggest wins, like of the era, I just kind of go back to that. Like, you know how these guys are, like, you know how big routines are, just things going to plan is like so important to them. Or is that me just being harsh? Like, it's not quite like the Tigres Columbus Crew game where the Crew were worried about, you know, crapping their pants on the field or anything. It's not like that dramatic, but I do think there's like a little bit of something that like was naturally going to like tilt it to Cincinnati beyond natural home field advantage. But I don't know. Like, does that take the staying out of that win or like the boost out of that win, that if I bring that up?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I think you have to consider that Tigres had just gotten off a plane. I think it was a 5-hour trip for them, or was that factoring in? I don't know.
Yeah, they got there at 5 p.m. local time for like an 8 o'clock kick.
They got there at 3, so it was 5 hours in between, but I can't remember how long the flight was. I thought I had seen, trying to remember, whatever it was. Regardless, they didn't have much time from getting off a long plane ride to then going into the game. Normally, you like to at least have a day that you're kind of settling in. At least they got to sleep in their own beds that night, so there's that. But it's not ideal to have just gotten off a plane 5 hours earlier and then play a game. And it looked really sloppy at the beginning for them. You know, one of the first goal in the 6th minute, you know, came off a really bad turnover. And so, yeah, I don't think that you can completely you have to factor that in. But I also don't think you can just discount the result altogether. It still was a 3-0 win, and they needed to take advantage of that advantage that they had, and that, you know, Tigres did have those travel delays. But we don't always see this team take advantage of those types of situations, and they did. They got, you know, their first 3-goal performance. You know, I looked back last year, it was in April before they got 3 goals in a match. So okay. And obviously they got more goals in the early stages of Champions Cup, but I don't consider
those you can't kind of dismiss. But all due respect to O&M, but yeah, different weight class.
But I mean, so I don't know. You do take it with a grain of salt, but also you have to acknowledge that it was a really good win and they did exactly what they needed to do. Now they go into Thursday at least having some confidence. They know they've got that lead, and now it'll be interesting to see how they approach it, because I think if they get an away goal, that really seals it, because that's the tiebreaker, and Tigres would need to score 5 goals at that point, which I'm sure people looking at Sunday's result aren't, you know, they realize that that is possible. But I think that was just Sunday. I know fans were not happy to see that, but I've kind of just thrown that out. The last 2 goals was they were down a man and they were just done, I think, in that match. So still would have been 4-1. That's not that much better, but it was a heavily rotated squad. And I think you're going to have performances like that every now and then. And it's not reflective of that defense at all. The defense has been really good this year, had only given up single goals in 2 games. So 2 goals over I think it was 6 total matches they had played up to that point. So I think the defense is not, I don't think you can expect them to give up that many goals very often. So
yeah, and I didn't so I was kind of on Next Pro duty, so I only got to watch as much as I could live and watch replays. But like with that rotation, I think the headliner there is Andre Chirilla getting his first MLS start. He's looked very good in CONCACAF. Obviously, there's only so much you can compare. But like, did you see a theme, or was it just as simple as it just wasn't their day?
I think both.
Would you single anybody out? Like back at full strength, would you say this looks a lot different? I guess,
I do. I do think that the first 3 goals were all either, it was 2 set pieces and then a cross in. And that has been their Achilles heel on defense, is those balls into the box. They just, for whatever reason. And, Miles Robinson, I do think maybe he could have used a break. He was in the middle of all that. But, so I don't know if I can say that it's all on him or anything, but yeah. I didn't think he would start that match. Just, I thought he would be the guy that they would, I thought they'd go with Matt Miazga. Just, throw him out there and give Miles a break, see what Matt can do. And you can, if it doesn't go well, it's one match and you can make changes at halftime. But I think that the fact that the goals came that way is a little disconcerting, because that's what we've seen in the past with this team. So at the same time, it was just a bad performance. Like Andre was the cross in that for the second goal, that was Andre kind of gave up too much space and allowed the cross in. But, and that is a 17-year-old who I still think is really an exciting player, but it was his first MLS match. And they started him because they felt like, one, he had earned it. I mean, he's been in first team training all this time. He's, he played in Champions Cup and looked good. His distribution, we were all excited about, like, this is what they need on the back line. But he is 17 and he's going to have moments like that, and he's learning, and I think he'll still be good. But
and you're also getting in those reps at 17, this game could be a huge learning lesson, like for every Xavier Gozo, right? For every, just like the youth movement that's like happening, like, you see it like really big in Salt Lake, that's buying them time. You kind of saw with Columbus Crew a couple of years ago, like that was insane. Like just like the, what they were able to pull off with like super, super young players. Yeah, so I don't know, like it's forgettable. But yeah, that's in the rear view. And FCC got, going back to the CONCACAF game, and that's what's tonight for the listener. FC Cincinnati got 3 goal contributions, including a brace from Kevin Dinke, which is obviously great to see, just given the context of his conversation. Arguably, the team's best cup performance since joining MLS. That's your note. I'm hijacking it. And then the news on Monday that he had a little accident on 71. What do you know about that?
Yeah. So the team got back around 8:00 Sunday night. And then, I don't know what happened in between then and 1:20-ish, but it was raining really hard. He kind of hit the right, there's video out there now. So he kind of hit the right, I don't know if it was a wall. It looked like he hit a wall on the right and then kind of went across and hit the wall on the left side. And I mean, fortunately, he is very fortunate. There was not a lot of cars on the highway at that time, because I mean, it could have been bad, and it looked bad from, the airbags deployed, you could see, but it was raining hard, and he was driving a sports car that is probably not easy to control in those situations. So no alcohol was involved. So no, and really fortunate he didn't have injuries. So he ended up reporting to the club facility in Milford later Monday morning or early afternoon. I'm not sure of the exact timing, but he got checked out by their team doctors, and he was fine and was in training the next 2 days. So I've seen him out at training Tuesday and Wednesday, and seems good to go. And he had posted on Instagram, you know, something about grateful for life. And I think he knew it could have been really bad. So it was a scary, you know, video had gotten out of, you know, from a Citizen app report where someone was filming and the tow truck taking it away. And it looked really scary. You didn't know for a little while. I was, you know, trying to figure out what all was going on, but I was happy to be able to report that he came through it okay. So seems like, it could have been bad, and fortunately it wasn't.
Yeah, no, and that's the most important part. I don't know what's going on in our highways this week, but everybody be careful. You know, like, it's just another reminder to, there's really no reason to take any risks, especially on the craziness that is 71 lately. So
yeah,
glad Kevin is healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the need to report on. I mean, there was tons of rumors out there about, like, how, you know, there were injuries and there alcohol was involved. And it's like, you know, when you hear that about an FC Cincinnati player, you've got to look into it. And then I would just, you know, to be able to clarify, like, here, he's fine. Like, I was just glad that, people were kind of ripping on the FC Cincinnati DP forwards and just some of the, so this one ended up just being, you know, it was just bad weather. And
yeah, like, I kind of dismissed, like, all that, like, whenever I saw just people comments, just people like who I just don't really, you know to be editorial people, like, commenting on it. It's like, everything I've seen, heard, whatever about Kevin, he is not that guy at all. Yeah. Like, he is the most, like, professional of all professionals. And, like, I really was just like, no, that seriously can't be true. So I didn't put much.
At the same time, he still does have a life. So, you know, the fact that he was out, you know, that's, people can leave their homes. And
of course they can. Yes. Like, but, and enjoy their fun car and all that. Like, that's the perks of being a professional athlete, right? Like, anybody hating on it, they're just jealous they can't do it.
And he's got, like, two other cars, so he's good. He's fine. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he hates to lose the orange Lamborghini that looks really nice, but I think he'll be okay. I guess just kind of to keep, you know, setting the scene for this week, looking at what Tigres, you know, they played Querétaro. How do you say that? I always say that wrong.
I've always said Querétaro. Oh my God. Querétaro. It's an opponent they've seen before. Cincinnati. Yeah. Fans. Sound off in the comments. How do you pronounce this team name?
I'm pretty sure it's Querétaro. They played to a scoreless draw on Sunday in Liga MX play. Tigres is sixth in Liga MX right now. So, again, we talked about the long plane ride that they came off last Thursday. FC Cincinnati took advantage of that. But now, you know, they're going into a hostile environment in Mexico. It's a tough place to play. Somebody had shared a stat that MLS teams are 661 and 15 all time, like, across all competitions in Mexico. So it's just a tough place to play. And but the fact that the FC Cincinnati has that 3-0 lead going in on the aggregate, as long as they don't give up four goals and not score, then they can advance. So an away goal, like I said, could really kind of put this one away. And we'll see what happens, but it could be an interesting few days going into, you know, what that means for Sunday. Like, there's probably a lot riding on that just because they've not done very well in league play so far. They're through four league matches with 3 points, you know, 1-3-0 at this point. And I mean, just looking at what Tigres would have to do against this FC Cincinnati defense, like, we haven't seen them give up that, you know, four goals very often. So, but we'll see how it goes down there. And then going into Sunday, like, they got to get something out of that, I think.
I mean, yeah, but we've thought that the last 2 weeks as well. So that's where it's going to get really interesting. I think if you advance in CONCACAF, you can hang your hat on that. If you advance by the thinnest of margins, that's going to carry on this intense scrutiny that everybody's under. And I don't think that they want that. Nor do I think anybody is going to successfully defend for 90 minutes. Like, they're going to have to go at that with the best intentions and like try to compete. And if they get smoked trying to compete, that's not going to look good either. So like, this team has a lot to prove right now. Should have beaten Toronto, should have definitely beaten the Revs under any circumstances. There's no excuse to lose 1-0 to Montreal. This is a team that's always in our, you know, in everybody nationwide, you know, continental wide, you know, everybody always has Montreal as like, you know, top three wooden spoon candidate. There's not much exciting about this team. And they're not in good form. You know, they came away with one win against Michael Bradley's quite literal baby Bulls. When we talk about that youth movement, like, you know, they're holding midfielders, a 16-year-old in Audrey Mladi, you know, like, not to say that like that was indicative of anything. Like, he's a very good player and like they've beaten better teams than Montreal, but whatever. They had a game plan for some clear vulnerable. Oh my God, I can't talk now. vulnerabilities, you know, like with a super, super young squad, whatever. I don't think that's a great thing on their resume, like to where like, FC Cincinnati should fear them at all. Like, this is a team you've got to just put belt to butt, as the kids say. Like, they just have to make a statement, regardless of what happens in CONCACAF.
That result for Montreal, that was the 3-0 win that everyone, right? 3-0?
Yeah, they beat them 3-0. It's like, it's just random. Those games are going to happen. But like, that was Cincinnati, New England 6-1. You know what I mean? Like, that was that. You just can't explain some things, but they can't have two of those, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see. We'll get into all that with Nate. But I got to think, you know, the transfer window, I guess it is worth noting, just because in all of this, you kind of end up talking about the depth and wondering, did they just not, I thought it was a deeper roster, like looking at the midfield and the center backs, but then you consider that Matt hasn't really, I mean, he hasn't started a game yet. And so now you kind of question that depth back there a little bit. The forward depth we have questioned. I still think that's an issue that they need to address. The transfer window is still open till March 26th. I'm not hearing anything, but you never know. The amount of GAM that they have available is very slim. So that, I don't know how, if that, I think they could still move someone off a U22, like Gilberto Flores. I think they could take him off a U22. I think a U22 forward would be a great way to address that issue, if they can find a young, exciting player and, you know, be able to take advantage of the benefit of the U22, where you don't have to factor in that transfer fee into your salary cap. So I don't know, if they could do something like that, that might be something to look at. Otherwise, I still feel like this is a team that tends to look at who's still available on the market free agent wise that they can bring in anytime. So even if they don't make a move by next week, you know, maybe they still can add someone in free agency, but we'll see. Maybe by this point next week, we're not worried about the depth because they have gotten a good result at Zegras and beaten Montreal.
Kenji and Bobadem scored 4 goals to make his, to really leave no questions about that forward depth.
There we go. Though I think he's kind of a wing back for them now, so we'll see.
Whatever, man. Yeah.
Well, we'll jump into the match with our guest for this week. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Hoist. Hoist is IV level hydration created to fuel adventure, increase performance, maximize capabilities, and power the grit that gets things done. Hoist is more than a sports drink, a lot more. It's carefully formulated, aggressive hydration science, and research in action. Hoist is clinically proven to hydrate 110% better than water and keep your body hydrated longer. Hoist is half the sugar and 3 times the electrolytes, with no artificial dyes, preservatives, or artificial sweeteners. No surprise, then, that Hoist is the trusted and preferred hydration partner of the U.S. military and the U.S. Department of Defense.
Well, thanks to our friends from Hoist, glad to have them a part of the show as usual. And again, if anyone else is interested in partnering with us, be sure to reach out and I'll get you a media kit. Contact us at thequeencitypress@gmail.com. So let's go on and bring in our guest for this week. Nate Bucati joined us. He was actually our MLS season opener guest going into that first match against Atlanta, and he was excellent. So I'm so happy that he could join us again. Again, he's a play-by-play announcer for MLS on Apple TV, one of the most respected voices in American soccer broadcasting. Previously, was a lead commentator for this for Sporting Kansas City from 2015 to 2022, but he's been in broadcasting for more than 20 years. And be sure to check out his book. You can pre-order it on Amazon. We'll bring that up again, probably, I'm sure. But that is called Perfect Pitch: How Kansas City Became the Heart of American Soccer and Landed the World Cup. So congrats to him on that. And like I said, you can pre-order through Amazon or his website, which is natebucati.com. And we'll have that in the show notes. Well, thanks for joining us again, Nate. We are just thrilled to have you back. We really enjoyed our conversation going into that Atlanta game earlier this year. So welcome back to the Queen City Press podcast preview show.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I'm excited to be with you again. Excited to be coming back to the Queen City this weekend. I'll be flying in. I've got Toronto, Columbus on Saturday. So flying in Saturday night and then quick turnaround. So a fun little doubleheader this weekend with both the Ohio teams.
Yeah, well, we're keeping you busy because we're going to talk a little bit about the, you know, FC Cincinnati goes back into Champions Cup play Thursday night at Tigres. And it seems like a big week for them, just in terms of, obviously, they want to advance in Champions Cup, but they're not doing so. FC Cincinnati is not doing so well in MLS play. So that Montreal game on Sunday, I think, is going to be important just for calming the fans' nerves at this point. But, you know, I guess, how are you seeing things just going into this week for FC Cincinnati and just kind of the state of the team at this point?
Yeah, it's I know it's been a disappointing start to the season for Cincinnati, and I thought it's really interesting because three of the more consistent teams, in my view, over the last few years in the Eastern Conference have been Cincinnati, Columbus, and Orlando, and they're all off to rough starts. You know, and then Philadelphia as well. I guess I should put them in the mix. They've been very consistent as well. Supporters Shield winners a year ago, and they're off to an absolutely dreadful start. So it's interesting, right? I guess this is Major League Soccer. We always need to remember that this league is it's volatile. You never know from week to week what's going to happen, and also from year to year. I do think, you know, I think it's interesting. I just had a call with Henrik Rudstrom from Columbus a little while ago, and we were talking about their difficult start. And, you know, one of the things I brought up to him was, you know, they're still looking for their first win. At least Cincinnati's got that monkey off their back. But I was talking about, you know, you guys have seen it. You guys have covered the league long enough to know that almost every team goes through a stretch where they're on the struggle bus for a month or so. And unless you're one of those Supporters Shield winning teams, and I know, you know, Cincinnati in that mix, but even Cincinnati's had their stretches right through the course. So it's just hard in an MLS season, especially when you get into situations where you got a congestion of matches, whether you're playing on multiple fronts, you're playing, back in the day, if it was Open Cup, if it was just because you might have some Wednesday matches piled up, that can make a big difference. I know we'll get to that with what's going on in Champions League. I don't think you can't separate the two, right? These things are related with the way the Pat's got to pick his starting 11, with the energy level that he brings against a team that might be well rested. So you have stretches like this. When it's at the start of the season, I think it feels more magnified, right? If you get off to a really good start and then all of a sudden 2 months into the season, you go through a little bit of a stretch, you still look up at the table and you're like, oh, we're doing, you know, it doesn't feel like as big a crisis. When you get off to a start like this, I think it feels like a bigger deal. Now, which of these teams can correct themselves? Look, Orlando, they let go of their coach. Philadelphia have gotten put to the sword a couple times. Now, I know Cincinnati just had a result like that too, so I don't want to poo-poo that. But I don't think that – I think that one's a little bit more circumstantial than it is a situation where look at how big of a mess Cincinnati are right now. I feel like they're going to settle some things down. They'll get some things sorted out as the season goes on. It'll surprise me if at the end of the year we look at it and you're still looking at an 11th Cincinnati team. That was a long answer, guys, but that's kind of how – I don't know. That's my 30,000-foot view. I'm curious what you guys think of it.
Yeah, and it seems like the priority right now, they're just in a favorable CONCACAF Champions Cup situation, which I think is, you know, any team would be envious of. You got to work very hard to qualify for it. But, you know, what do you think it does to a team when they try to balance both of these out of the gate and your depth just doesn't turn out to be what you thought it was? You know, do you stay prioritizing one competition over another? We know a coach would never admit that. But do you think there's anything to that, just given where Cincinnati is right now and, you know, this great position they have, at least heading into tonight?
Yeah, I've seen it firsthand. I was a play-by-play announcer for Sporting Kansas City in 2019, and they went to, in fact, I got to go to a match at Estadio Universitario in Monterrey because Sporting was playing in the semifinals at Monterrey the next day, and you know, Tigres was playing against Santos at the time, and so we got some tickets, and I went and got to go watch that game in the stands, and it's a great atmosphere. It's, by the way, just a little aside here, it's a juxtaposition because Monterrey, where the, you know, they're kind of like the, they almost seem like the nouveau riche in that town between the two rivals, because they got the brand new shiny fancy stadium that's going to be played in the World Cup. And Estadio Universitario is a little earthy, you know. It's been around for a long time, but I think that the atmosphere was better there to me, from the crowd standpoint and all those things when I went to that game. So it's going to be a tough spot for Cincinnati. I think that's one thing you got to remember is just because you have a 3-goal lead, you don't take this tie for granted at all. And I'm sure – I'm not saying anything Pat Noonan doesn't know. They got to be ready to go down there and play for this game. What I saw in Kansas City, that was in a semifinal where they had beaten Toluca in one round. Then they went to won a game against La Chorrera in Panama. And then they got to the semis against a really high powered Monterrey team at that time. And they got hammered. And what ended up happening was a season where Sporting thought they were, you know, contenders in the West. I think they were still in the, yeah, they were in the West. Yeah. The whole season fell apart from there. And I'm not suggesting that's what's going to happen to Cincinnati, but it can happen. If you don't rotate your squad, you try to run out all your guys, which is kind of what Sporting tried to do, is run out their first team. And they had like Champions Cup game. Then they had opener at LAFC, then right back down to, you know, Central America for another Champions Cup game. And it, all of a sudden, a handful of guys got hurt, and the team just never recovered. Now, I've also seen a team like the New York Red Bulls. I want to say it was just a year right before that, 2018. They went all the way to the final, and it didn't seem to affect them at all. I think they won Supporter Shield that year. I think they did, but they had a great regular season, and it didn't affect them at all. So I'm just giving you two different examples to tell you who knows where it goes from here. But I do think it's a real thing. And as we talk about the roster limitations that you have, it's not like if you watch Arsenal right now playing on four different fronts. Well, they're too deep at every single position. They got world-class players. They can rotate with almost zero drop-off. How many teams in Major League Soccer really have been able to acquire that kind of depth? Almost impossible. Because of the roster, you know, regulations. So what Pat's trying to do right now with rotating the squad and dealing with this is a challenge. I don't know what the right answers are for it. I do think the good thing about it, if you're a major league team, is with the playoff format, it's more forgiving. You don't have to finish in first to put yourself in a position to go win MLS Cup down the road. And I know that's the ultimate goal for Cincinnati. They won Supporter Shield. You know, they want to win that MLS Cup. And there's so many games on the second of this schedule after the summer transfer window, where 20 games this time after the world instead of typically transfer window. So you get a 3-0 lead against Tigres. you're good enough to go compete with, I think, everybody pretty much in this competition. So I don't blame them at all for prioritizing it right now. I'm giving you guys long answers today, guys. I don't know what's in me. I'm not, sorry, but
hey, no, the more you talk, the better.
No, no worries. I was trying to unmute myself, so sorry for the pause there. I think the thing that Pat Noonan is running up against is that, and maybe some of the noise we're hearing from the fans right now is just, I don't think the fans are really bought in on Champions Cup. Like, they are concerned about MLS play. They want to win an MLS Cup, and they view it as, we got to, you know, put ourselves in the standings as high as we can so we can have home games, and this is how we're going to win an MLS Cup. But Pat Noonan is looking at the first trophy on the table right now, which is Champions Cup. And then you also see, you know, the other teams in this competition outside of Philadelphia Union. I mean, LAFC, LA Galaxy, Nashville, Seattle, Vancouver, San Diego, and Miami all at least have 7 points in MLS play. So that, I think that's what he's kind of running up against, is these fans see that these other teams are still doing well in league play. FC Cincinnati is not, and this was a schedule that they kind of viewed as favorable for FC Cincinnati coming out of the gate with, you know, teams that have traditionally struggled. So I guess, and that's another team we'll get into, to Monterey, or not Monterey, Montreal in a little bit. But I guess, like, I think that the fans should be excited about this opportunity in Champions Cup. They don't, I don't think, agree with me necessarily. Some do. But I mean, what is the key to, because you mentioned how that hostile environment, how tough that is. What is the key to advancing? And do you, I mean, could this be a situation where maybe the fans get concerned because they see them like parking the bus just to survive, when maybe they need to, you know, get out on the front foot and kind of put the series away? What do you think as far as the approach?
Well, I'm actually kind of curious your guys' thoughts, and I'm not to take the conversation in a different direction, but why don't people care about the Champions Cup? And what can we do about that? You know, I think, because I think that that's wrong. I think you should care. This League's Cup is great. I think it's a great competition. That's not the entire continent, right? I mean, like, this is your continental championship. This, if you win this, you know, you get spots in the Club World Cup type of thing, you know? And I, it kind of disappoints me, and I get it. Like, maybe it's the American mindset of, we only can focus on one competition at a time, 'cause that's the way our sports calendars shake out. In some sports, we only have one trophy. We don't have multiple trophies that you can chase. But I feel this way, and maybe it was because I learned a lot under Peter Vermees when I was starting my play career. But he said all the time, he said, look, we mean what we say here in this club. We're about winning things. And the trophies are what we want to win. And we want to win every trophy that we're a part of. And so during the Sporting Kansas City's little, I would call it a dynasty. They won 4 trophies. What was it in 6 years? And 3 of those were Open Cups. And the Open Cup, the U.S. Open Cup, was the first one. And I know they always wanted to win that Champions Cup and Champions League, as they called it at that time. And, you know, people can say, hey, yeah, maybe it torpedoed a season for them in 2019. But don't you want a manager that wants to win? I mean, don't you want a manager that wants to go after trophies that are that are there to be won? I don't know what you guys think. It makes me kind of sad to hear that that the fans fans would rather you not try to go win a trophy like that you have a chance to win. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think one way you fix that is go ask Seattle Sounders fans about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I mean,
yeah,
I feel like we've been asking guests, and I, you know, try to ask the players like what this means to them, just to kind of help educate the fans a little bit. But yeah, it's a huge trophy on the. Go ahead.
And I'm sorry, Laurel. But Tyler, to your point, you know, Seattle's again an interesting one, because that's another good example of, they won, and it was in a way a Pyrrhic victory, right? Because they lost their defensive midfielder, the heart and soul of their team, and it really, it torpedoed the rest of their MLS season. But if you ask, if I'm a Seattle fan, I'm strutting around going, we're the only MLS team to win this dang thing. You know, I still think that if this league is, we all here in present company want to see the league be successful. We want to see the league continue to grow. And before we can even set our sights anywhere near those top five leagues in Europe, you got to be able to go toe to toe with the best teams in Mexico and beat them on a consistent basis. And I'm not trying to dismiss the League's Cup at all. I love the fact that we're going to get some matches in Mexico this time around, because up to this point, to me, the only time I can really claim a championship on this continent is if you win this competition, where you got to go down to their place. Everybody's kind of playing on an equal footing in that regard. And I think it's great. Now, I can't tell other fans how to feel about it. And the timing of it's weird. I get that. Like, it's early in the season. It's not like, you know, if you're playing in Europe and you play in the UEFA Champions League, that's coming at the end of the season, just like all the other trophies that you might win. This one, it is kind of weird because it's early in the season. But to go back to your point, Laurel, what does Cincinnati need to do in this game? I do think it would be silly for them to open the game up. You don't want a wide open game when you got a 3-0 victory. And I think that Pat Noonan's teams know how to shut up shop a little bit, make it highly contested in the midfield. Don't give things away. Don't make this a transitional game. You've got the opportunity to pick up a goal or two if they've got a – because they're going to have to throw numbers forward like crazy. I mean, Tigres going to have to take all kinds of risks, I would think, in this game. And you've got the firepower to go make them pay with a goal or two in that regard. So I think a pragmatic approach. I'm not going to tell Pat Noonan how to do his job, you know, but that's kind of what I would expect a little bit in this situation.
Yeah, and staying on Seattle, just, you know, for FC Cincinnati fan perspective, I just want to, you know, see what your thoughts on this are. I look back because I remember them starting the year very slow last year. And if I didn't fudge anything taking notes, they only got one win out of their first seven MLS games. They go on to win League's Cup against, you know, Messi's Miami. They have like a super unlucky run in the they got eliminated from the playoffs without losing a game, right, to Minnesota. And like, they were a legit contender. You know, just throughout the years, like, have you seen teams like, you know, and I don't think Seattle's an anomaly, right? Have you seen teams have these slow starts, but then be able to turn it around? And like, do you still view at least like the power of this Cincinnati group as one of those teams that can turn it around? Or are you kind of humbling your expectations just based on what you've seen the first few weeks of them?
Absolutely. Teams can turn it around in this league. 100%. And again, that format. Now, can you overcome a slow start like that and win the supporter shield? Probably not. But again, that what we've talked about is, I don't think that's near the top of the priority list for FC Cincinnati right now. Not that they would turn it down, but I just think they've got bigger fish to fry. Do I expect this team to be better? Yeah. Now look, I'm doing that annoying thing where you ask questions and answer them yourself. So I'm gonna do it again. Do I think there are concerns? Of course. And I know, Laurel, you and Pat had that exchange after the game the other day. Look, when I got to go over the opener, the conversation was, okay, where's the attack going to improve for Cincinnati when they didn't go out and make like a big money signing? And by the way, I remember at that time the conversation was, can you really afford to make a defender a designated player when it hardly ever happens in the league? And that first game against Atlanta, Miles Robinson was the best player on the field as far as I'm concerned. He was like, it was like he was out to prove to everybody, yeah, this is why I'm a designated player. You know, but the question was, okay, how do they get the attack going? And a lot of it was, you know, we made a change in the assistant coaching staff. We're going to improve our approach in the final third. We're going to have maybe a clear game plan of final third entries and how we're going to get the ball and work the ball into the penalty area, you know, create a higher XG, I think was a big priority. I haven't looked at the numbers yet, guys, as I'm prepping for this game, but I'm getting the sense it's been disappointing. The returns have been disappointing to this point. But also I remember that Evander got hurt 10 minutes into the season. So another one of the big conversations was, how do you get Denke and Evander on the same page and working in a more symbiotic type situation? Well, that kind of throws things off. You're not planning on one of those two guys pulling a hamstring 10 minutes into the year. And that kind of changes things a little bit as well. So I think, look, when you look at the midfield quality that Cincinnati has, I think it's good enough to be a contending team in the Eastern Conference. When you look at the back line, especially if Matt is healthy, you know, is that a good enough back line to be contender in the East? Yes. Denke is good enough in the attack, and Evander, I think, are good enough to be contenders. They need, obviously, to still sort some of those things out. Rome wasn't built in a day. I do think you have a little bit of concern, like, okay, this was the idea for how we're going to make the attack better. Is it working? Is it going to work? I don't know the answer to that yet, but I'm not writing it off for sure. I mean, I still look at this squad. And look, Pat Noonan didn't forget how to coach overnight. You know, I mean, the guy made Cincinnati a winning team on a consistent basis like the minute he got there. I don't think all of a sudden he's just lost it. So, yeah, to me, I look at this team, I look at the roster, and I think unless they have a bunch of injuries and real problems, I don't see why this team shouldn't be a factor in the Eastern Conference and steady themselves a little bit, you know, as the season gets going.
Well, that's why I was kind of wondering about just the approach on Thursday at Tigres is like – with the fans as restless as they are right now, and you know they are going to be at home on Sunday against Montreal, like could they position themselves where maybe at halftime they feel comfortable enough with where things stand that maybe they can get some of those starters out and save them for Sunday? Like, do you think should that just to be able to put their best foot forward on Sunday as well, is that something you think they're thinking about?
I doubt it. I mean, maybe I would guess that Pat's in his mind going, boy, it'd be great if we could score a goal or two in the first half and then feel really good about it. But I think that's one of those, you hope the best, but you plan for the worst. I mean, you know, you hear that coach speak all the time of we got to take it one game at a time. It's speak, but it exists for a reason. My guess would be Pat's going to say, let's not get ahead of ourselves at all. Let's take care of this game in front of us. If you start to look ahead as, hey, can we rest this guy? Can we do that? And that's when you start begging trouble. And then all of a sudden you know, Tigres scored a goal and now the pressure starts to build and then you're sweating it out in a hostile environment and a tough place to play. So I think, you know, I just think that, and I think Pat knows how long the MLS season is. As frustrated as I know he is right now with the way the season started, he knows it's a long way to go. And I do think you got to have some faith in some of your players. You got Montreal. Montreal is a team that's really struggled. You know, they're I know they've had one good performance this year, but you're not it's a team that I'm looking at their roster. I'm looking at the changes they made in the offseason. This isn't a team that I think you should feel like you can rotate some and still give yourself a chance to win. I'm not saying you just roll the ball out and beat Montreal, but, you know, I think it's a team that would say, I feel like, hey, we rotate a handful of guys in this game. We should still be able to, at home, you know, with that environment, should still expect to deliver a good performance over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, catching Montreal as a get right game to just like reshape the kind of like narrative in the league. It's almost like a redo of last week, except this time you're at home, this time, at least this round of CONCACAF's behind you. Do you think there's anything to it though? You know, do you think Montreal is also catching Cincinnati maybe at the right time, making this game a little bit more interesting than it should be, given like Montreal's never really a statement game for Cincinnati. Now it kind of is. Cincinnati's always a statement game for Montreal, you know?
100%. You know, I remember, was it 2 years ago now, New England coming into Cincinnati when New England was at rock bottom in the East, and New England won the game, got a couple goals. Was it Vrioni that scored a couple times? My memory starts to work on that. You guys tell me if I get some of these details wrong. But what I do remember about the game coming into it was that it was New England team that was at the bottom of the table in the East, and Cincinnati were flying. I think they were on like an unbeaten streak, a lengthy unbeaten streak. And they always have us do the win probability before the game. And in that one, it was like, you know, Cincinnati far and away. And I pointed at it. I remember the commentary and said, that win probability to me is off because it's not factoring in some of the things that are going on in this game. And I can't remember what it was, but I think there were a couple guys injured for Cincinnati. They were coming on short rest. New England was healthy. They'd gotten a couple guys back that they hadn't had. And you guys know in this league, from top to bottom, I think it's one of the things that I love as a commentator, honestly, is because they'll give you games that on paper look like it's going to be a bad game. And then the thing that separates the good team from the bad team in MLS, it's very small margins, right? So a couple of your guys get hurt, boom, all of a sudden playing field's level. Your team's tired, their team's not, boom, playing field's level. And obviously, as we just said, I mean, Cincinnati's going through something that Montreal's not right now. So I think that levels the playing field a little bit for sure. I think it makes it a hard game for Cincinnati for sure. But that's kind of the business in the league, right? And so you got to find a way to navigate it and slog through it. And I think that's one of the things I always admire about Pat is, to me, like, I think he's a no-nonsense guy that doesn't give any excuses to his team and says, look, we got this game. We got to go out and try to win it. But I've seen Cincinnati lose at home against teams they were better than in terms of the big picture because of the circumstances of the moment. I don't think you can write that stuff off.
Well, it's a tough start to the season for Montreal, being on the road until mid-April, if I'm correct. A nice 3-0 win against Red Bulls, but then also have three losses, including the first two by a combined 8-0 score against Chicago and San Diego. They retained Marco. Is it Donadel? After he was the team's interim manager for most of last season. What do you think the expectations are for him in his first full year?
I don't know what the expectations are in Montreal, to be perfectly honest with you. Like I said, I mean, this is a team that they haven't invested at the same level that the other teams in Major League Soccer have. I think pure and simple, I don't know how you sugarcoat that. That's just been the case. When you look at the designated player usage and things like that, they just haven't. But they have some good players, you know, and I think that Prince Owusu is the type of player that can punish you if a mistake happens, if he gets his chance. I think he's a good player. I think he's kind of really led the way for that team. I thought their results against Red Bulls was a stunning one when I saw it, when I saw that scoreline, because of the way that Michael Bradley's got that team going. But the thing that I think you have to remember about Red Bulls is that's a really young team, and youth is a lot of times inconsistent. You know, you get the highs and the lows, and I don't know how much of that played into that game for Montreal and Red Bull, but it's hard to see, like I said, it's hard to qualify or to characterize Montreal as an ambitious team right now. You know, I just, like, the first thing I do when I start getting ready for a team is looking at, okay, the off-season acquisitions and off-season departures. Who did they bring in? Who did they let go? And a lot of guys they brought in, you're talking about guys like, you know, Dagger Dan Thorhalsson. That was a good, solid fullback in this league. Lost his job to Alex Freeman when he was in Orlando. So he was a backup in Orlando, and they trade for him. You look at Aviles the guy who was mercurial, I guess would be the best way to put it, you know, in his previous stop, but does have, you know, MLS experience. I didn't see a big splash or anything like that. But again, it's MLS, right? And we talked about some of the circumstances that kind of make it difficult for Cincinnati. So I expect it to be a hard game. I did a Montreal game in Columbus last year where they took Columbus to the wire. I think Lassie Lapalainen had a goal at the very end to win it, if I remember that one. But it was a game, and Montreal made it a game. You mentioned that weird, you know, they're used to it, I guess. The guys that have been on the team by now, they start the season on the road. A ton of games. It's an interesting thing, guys. I've got Toronto on Saturday. They're in a 9-game homestand right now, which, that's a Canadian team. And then Montreal's like in the middle of their typical, you know, opening up the season on a big road swing. That's got to be tough for them too.
No, it absolutely is. And like, they've got the Canadian Cup as well, which I like, it just falls so far in the background. Like, they've got their things too that, you know, that play into it. Speaking of their roster being just always, they're just kind of in their own world. I'm not sure if you like, this was interesting when I looked into it, the Ivan Jaime situation, the player that they have on loan from Porto. It seems like they're going to be cautious with his playing time so they don't have to trigger a purchase. I don't know. I just feel like that's just fun. Like, when you talk about, let's say, the unique way that they go about their business, I can't remember the last time I've seen that. You know, like, not like having a player, not needing him to do too good just because the long view, I don't think they actually, I guess, want to take on like a proper 10 right now and like invest that much. But like, that wasn't plan A when they started him. Like, have you gotten a sense of like what that is, or is that one just super unique and I don't know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to process that one. So
probably, it's so weird. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's, yeah.
but they have Wiki Carmona, you know, and I think he aided, you know, that Red Bulls performance, you know, burning your old team always feels good. And he is somebody who fell out of that Red Bull. Like, he could have been part of that youth movement. He didn't. And I think this is the right team for him, where he's flourishing. Do you feel like, you know, are you super high on him at least in what you've seen so far?
Yeah. Like, I guess that's what I would say is, a lot of the moves they made were bringing in guys from other Major League Soccer teams, right? Thor Hallsson, Aviles, and you know, Brian Vera. But yeah, I think Carmona's a solid pickup. Like, I don't think any of them are bad pickups, honestly. Like, I think they're all good, solid Major League Soccer players for the most part. Like I said, Aviles is he's mercurial, but well, he played on a championship winning team. So I think they're all good pickups, and I think Carmona is a good pickup. So he's that team. It's just the thing that you do see that's lacking is, okay, I mean, we're talking about designated players, right? You guys know this as well as anybody. The conversation about Miles Robinson is a big one, because everyone knows that you only have these three opportunities to get a truly transformative player on your roster. And if you waste one of those, it can be catastrophic. Well, what if you're a team that doesn't even use them? You know, like, what if you're a team that just doesn't even go out and try to get big name players that are going to make a difference for your team? How do you compete in this league when we're at a stand, you know, like, you guys know it. I mean, you guys see how much money it costs to bring in Denke and Evander. Everybody in this league, for the most part, is using those spots and spending some serious money to bring somebody in. So if you're not doing that, how do you really contend in this league?
Well, and just looking at, like, you mentioned some of those moves that they made within MLS, like Aviles, Vera, Thor Hallsson, like, that's all defensive players too. How much are they hurting? Just not, I mean, they gave up 8 goals over those 2 games against Chicago and San Diego. I don't know. What are you saying? I guess just let's talk about the defense a little bit, because those were some of the moves that they were relying on and just don't seem to be panning out quite yet, at least. What are you seeing in that side of the ball?
Yeah, it's been a tough start. Now, listen, you know, they I'm looking back through the results right now. You open up at San Diego. San Diego look like they were not a fluke last year, right? That's a team that can carve some teams open. Chicago, though, I just had Chicago last weekend, and that's a team that, for whatever reason, has not been a good home side. You know, they were bad at home last year, considering they made the playoffs. I just had their game. They lost at home to DC United, which has not been one of the powers for a long time. And in fact, they won the one last year, and their manager, when I was getting ready, I hate this conversation, guys. I don't like the tone of I don't want to, I want to be positive about everybody in the league. You know, DC United, it was hard. Even their manager, Renee Viler, said to me before the game, he's like, look, we got to know where we're at and where we're coming from. We were bottom of the league last year. It's going to take us a while. He was downplaying his own team, like, hey, it's going to take us a while to build this thing up. They beat Montreal 3-0 and played a decent part of that game down a man. You know, so that's all this stuff is really what made Montreal's win against Red Bull such a head scratcher, I think, in an eye opener. I was like, wait, what? Because then they turn back and they lose to an Orlando side that's already fired their manager and looks to be in all sorts of disarray right now. So now that was on the road. They've all been on the road. But I don't think you would sit there and say that the defense has looked – I mean, they had the clean sheet against New York Red Bull, but outside of that, they've given up a lot of chances and a decent number of goals so far this year.
Yeah, and I know you like to be positive, but this is I'm not saying this one way or another. I'll just set the scene kind of as we've seen fans suggesting to meet the club at the airport about Pat Noonan as of their last result. Nate, let's just say they go over 2 this week. Let's say they somehow lay an egg or worse in CONCACAF. Let's say that they lose to Montreal. Do you hit the panic button even after that point?
Do I? No.
Yeah, I think that that's important to say just for any listener. There's a sliver of fans that are so ready to just like have heads roll. And I don't think many peers or certainly people that like I, you know, talk to who've been around at least like nobody else is quite there. And I just kind of wanted people to hear that from at least your side, you know?
Yeah, guys. How far off was this team from the Supporters Shield last year?
1 point.
1 point. Yeah.
One point. And who do they lose to in the playoffs?
The winners, Miami.
The team that was like, I mean, by the end of the season last year, Miami was head and shoulders the best team in the league, right? Like, through the course of the year they weren't, but once they got some things sorted out, when they got into that postseason, they were a juggernaut. Nobody beat them. So you lose to the team that nobody beat, that's got all the, you know, that's got the best player in the world and you know, other star players as well. I don't know. Listen, every manager at some point in time, the time comes, right? Everybody's got a shelf life, but we're not talking about a guy that like had struggles last year. You know, like in Kansas City, I'm sorry to keep referencing that, but I do think there's a lot of parallels, like, you know, Peter Vermees, Pat Noonan, they strike me as somewhat similar guys, in some ways, kind of old school guys, MLS guys, no nonsense, tell like it is type of guys. And I think it's one of the reasons I like Pat. But, you know, at the end, when Peter was let go, it was like, okay, there were a few years of struggles stacked up. And there were signs all over the place that the culture that used to exist in the building wasn't there anymore. You guys are closer than me. This team was 1 point off the Supporters Shield last year. And they just beat Tigres 3-0. I mean, we're talking about one of the giants of Mexican soccer for the last decade plus, one of the richest clubs in Liga MX. And I don't know. And you're talking about a club that won 3 wooden spoons and had all, I mean, I don't need to tell you guys this, but I wouldn't tell any fan how to feel. You know, if you're a fan, you got to pay your money. You feel the way that you want to feel. A more emotionally divorced from it, looking at this club, a team that was a perennial loser has been turned into a perennial winner. It's a 4-game stretch we're talking about here that the team has struggled a little bit. And not only was it a perennial loser, the revolving door at the coaching position, right? Like I look at a lot of these clubs and around, I mean, look at like, I mean, I bring my scope out and look at other teams across the world. Like look at this spiral that teams like Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur have gotten into where it's like, we're just firing a coach every year and we can't ever get any traction because we can't get anything built because the next coach loses a bunch too. So we got to make a change again. He wanted to play this formation, but we had to fire him. So now we got this guy and he wants to play this formation. And then we got to fire him. You can't assemble a roster that actually has any continuity to it because again, I just got off the phone with, you know, Henrik Rudström is in Columbus and he's trying to figure out how to get the pieces that he inherited to play, and he decided, I'm not going to shoehorn them into the way that I played in my last place. I'm going to try to see if I can. And they're struggling. So he's like, well, do I need to change it over to the way I played in the past? That, do you want to get into that cycle as a Cincinnati fan base when, because of a four game stretch where you started and it's disappointing, or because you haven't had the success in the postseason that you want to have? A lot of these teams, I mean, look, one team's MLS Cup, right? But a lot of, I've seen a lot of teams over the years, it's like they get there, and then finally they get over the hump. I don't know, man. It seems wild to me to turn on a coach that's brought as much success to that club on a consistent basis as he has. I'm hoping that's a vocal minority, honestly, and not like a majority. It just kind of seems like it's, you're almost not remembering what it was like before he got here. And like I said, it'd be one thing if they had a couple losing seasons in a row, even one losing, like even if they were coming off of a 13th place finish a year ago. I don't see it, guys. That's just me. Again, 30,000 foot view, looking at it from the outside. I don't think Pat Noonan's forgotten how to coach.
No, I think that it comes down to that the fan, like I said, the fans just aren't bought in on Champions Cup. And so they're looking at this league start and they're saying, well, we were promised that we were going to see more exciting soccer, more attacking, and, you know, in league play, they were shut out twice. And I just think that probably has a lot to do with it. And too many people maybe don't even realize they're playing midweek. They're looking at those league games. I'm not sure, but I'm with you. I think they're focused on Champions Cup right now, and that's the first trophy on the table. And I think, you know, they're in a good spot right now for that, and people should be excited about that. But what do I know?
Long way to go in this season, guys. You know, long way.
Yeah. Well, I think that wraps up everything that we had to talk about with you. Is there anything else? We mentioned your book. Anything new with that? Perfect Pitch coming out. When's that come out again? Remind us.
It comes out May 26th. You can order it on Amazon right now. If you just like type in Perfect Pitch Kansas City, it should take you right to it. How Kansas City became the heart of American soccer, won the World Cup. I've referenced Kansas City too much already on this conversation, but I've learned a lot about the league and the construct of it and the evolution of it through my time there. And I've told you guys this before. I think Cincinnati is a perfect example. What I've kind of tried to argue in the book with the World Cup, it's the one small market that the World Cup is coming to this year. And so I think it's a great underdog story, but I also think the story of how Kansas City became a World Cup city is reflective. It's like emblematic of other cities like Cincinnati. I think that Cincinnati and Kansas City and places like that, Portland, I would put in that mix, have shown almost the bigger markets in the United States that soccer is legit. And it there is a culture here. There is an organic fan base here, and it deserves to be celebrated. So I try to kind of tell that story through the lens of what Kansas City did. And I think that what you see in Cincinnati with the stadium, I told you guys this last time I was on with you, that atmosphere in Cincinnati. And I would say this, I hope the fans don't feel like I'm criticizing them or telling them, because I love the passion. And if the fans are mad, that means they care. And what I would really underscore is, if you are a club, you would much rather have the fans up in arms and demanding firings and stuff like that than a fan base that just doesn't go to the games, you know, that doesn't have any passion and doesn't care at all. Apathy is a big problem. People being mad that you're off to a bad start, that means they care. And I know the fan base in Cincinnati, they care about the team. And that's one of my reasons that it's one of my favorite places to come. So that's kind of a tangent, but that's the book's about Kansas City. But honestly, I think it's a story of like, yeah, this is American soccer, and this is a market just like Cincinnati, where maybe things that people from other parts of the world wouldn't expect, you know, when it comes to this vibrant fan base and rich soccer culture.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you tying that into Cincinnati as much as you could. I think that everyone's okay with you talking about Kansas City, as long as you're not talking too much about that other team up north, Columbus, which you did have to mention a little bit, but it's all right. It's all good. So we appreciate your time. It's always great chatting with you.
Well, looking forward to seeing you guys this weekend. And I'm looking forward to watching this, the second leg against Tigres. I think it's going to be entertaining. And listen, if Cincinnati go and they win a two-leg series against a club like that, everybody in Cincinnati ought to be really proud of that, I think. I think it's a big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nate, thank you so much once again. I'm sure we'll talk again at this rate a couple more times this year, and it's just so great to have you on and share all the nuggets and just everything that you offer to the to a podcast. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, guys. Have a great show. I love what you guys do, and I'll see you this weekend.
All right. Great stuff once again from Nate. We could literally talk to him all day, but unfortunately we have time limits on this one. And yeah, just going off of that last question, I thought he said something important. You know, if you're a fan, I'm not telling you how to feel. Neither am I. I just felt that it was premature, and it just made the rounds enough that it feels like there is, you know, a decent part of the fans that feel that way. I just think that when you listen to other people around the league, like such as Nate, such as other people will have on, even Gio last week, who'd probably be the most qualified to speak on it, nobody who's seen seasons come and go is quite there. So if you're on the Fire Noonan train, you're probably like kind of the only one. And I don't say that as like a club spokesperson or anything like that. If it becomes the elephant in the room, obviously, you know, that is a possibility. But yeah, I thought that that was important to say, and not something like we enjoy talking about multiple weeks in a row, but because it's so out there, we just kind of have to go into it. But I'll leave it there. What are your final thoughts on the current Noonan temperature of his chair?
I mean, it's premature. Like, I mean, I had to ask about it after last season. Just fans were so upset after that 4-0 loss to the eventual winners, and Miami is so good. Like, that team was built to win championships. And I mean, you can say what you want about Miami and how they build their roster and get exceptions and whatever. Everyone kind of, you know, has their takes on that. But I mean, they were, like Nate pointed out, 1 point from the supporter shield. You know, I get that they want more exciting soccer, and that's kind of what the team in the offseason talked about. And I think it's just too early to judge, like, the balancing of Champions Cup. Like, they've done really well in Champions Cup, and that's been the priority. And so when you look at these not so great games in MLS play, like, I just don't think you can judge that. And yeah, some teams are able to handle the two competitions at once, but FC Cincinnati, it's clear they're focused on trying to get something out of Champions Cup. They've never advanced out of the round of 16, and they're right on the doorstep of that. And yeah, it's just too early to judge what we're going to see from the attack. Like Nate also mentioned, Evander, you know, he had his first start just on Sunday, but he had, you know, six other rotated guys around him that he was playing with. And he was really the only, I mean, Dotto ended up scoring, yeah, but he was kind of the big piece on the attack. You didn't have Ender, you didn't have Kevin Denke. Pavel Buka didn't play, so he didn't have his normal pieces around him. It was that game, you just toss that one out. Like, I know I say that sometimes. I said that about the Minnesota game. I know that was also just cold. They lost 1-0. You know, Toronto, terrible game. They lost 1-0. New England was ugly, but it's still just too early, I think, to judge what this team is going to be. And if we're looking at the games up to this point, it's the Champions Cup games that you should be judging on, at least, because that's where they've put out their best lineups. And so we'll see what happens. You know, it could go not very well in Mexico, and I might say the same thing because it's a tough environment. Who knows? But they've done well to this point in that competition, and it's too early in MLS to decide that, you know, this isn't a team that's going to do anything in league play. So I'm just going to say, pump the brakes a little bit. Like, do remember those wooden spoon seasons. I've, you know, covered those years. It was miserable for me too, because then I was hearing the other side of the fans actually having valid concerns and not being able to provide any optimism. So I'm going to provide the optimism where I can. And this is, you know, still a good team that we just can't fully judge. I don't think that we can.
That we'll leave that there for now. But again, I'm willing to be wrong. You're willing to be wrong. If it, you know, let's say they just never win a game again in 2026, there will be a time, you know, there will be a time to have that to resurface. But I guess
I can eat my crow, because I mean, in 2019, I thought it was too early when they fired Alan Koch. And before I realized he had really lost the locker room and it needed to be done, I thought, man, how many games did he get? Like five? Maybe it was more than that. I just felt I was like, man, this far into MLS and they're already like making this change. Like, but yeah, that's a different situation. If you've lost the locker room, I don't think that's the case with Noonan. He's a player's coach. They like him. You know, I haven't heard anything about like Noonan out from inside. So if it got to that, then that would be a different story.
Of course. Yeah. But like, that's also just one of the things you're not hearing. And that could be for a million reasons. And we could do 2 hours on this topic, it sounds like. Unfortunately, we do have to have some guardrails. And there's other podcasts if they want to go in on that. You know, there's more source to fuel your fire. But you have the Patreon press pass returning this week. Who's asking who questions, I guess?
So one of my subscribers. So yeah, again, the Patreon press pass. It's our new segment where I give my subscribers over on Patreon a chance to submit questions they would like asked of either players or staff members. And then I go and record myself asking that question on their behalf. And so that's just kind of a perk you get as a subscriber. And then I share it here for the public to hear and bring something unique to this episode. So this week it is Patreon member James St. John, and he had a couple of questions for Miles Robinson. So let me bring that in for you guys to hear. This is a question from James St. John, who wants to know, who is the best on-field communicator on your team and who is the most physical teammate? I don't know. To me, that seems like that could be the same person. What do you think?
It depends, I think, on the day. I think we have a lot of vocal players. It kind of goes to the back line, whether it's like Matt or Teenage, who's the most vocal. It kind of just depends on the day. Because also, you know, there's plenty of guys that are vocal as well besides them. But most physical, maybe Teenage, just in terms of his tackles that I'll put in.
Who else would be in the mix just to kind of add to it?
For physicality?
Yes. Or,
I mean, you think of like center backs as like being physical, but Obi's definitely a physical player as well as like a vocal player as well. So that would be another player, I'd say.
So that was Miles Robinson answering a question for the Patreon press pass. So be sure to check out my content over on there at patreon.com/Queen City Press. And if you have questions and you're a subscriber, just send a question through Patreon so I know that you're a subscriber, and then I'll toss it into the mix. So hopefully you guys are enjoying those. And speaking of Miles Robinson, I guess we did have some news this week that popped up with the international window coming up. Miles Robinson and Roman Celentano both got called into the U.S. national team. They are playing a couple of World Cup tune-ups against Belgium and Portugal. So that'll be during the break. FC Cincinnati is not playing, but after Sunday's game at against Montreal, they've got a break until April 4th. So that's when that international window is. And Pavel Buka also got called into the Czech Republic national team. It's his first call up since 2021, and he called it his first like proper call up, and it's a huge opportunity for him. This is for Czechia. They are trying to get that last spot into the World Cup, so there are a pair of playoff games that he could potentially be a part of. That he's got to beat the Republic of Ireland on, I believe that game is March 26th, and that'll be in Prague. And if they win that, then they get to go into the deciding game against either Denmark or North Macedonia, and that game will be on March 31st. And Yeah, so he's got a chance to potentially help his country to the World Cup here where he's playing. He would love to be a part of that. That's just a huge opportunity for him. So any thoughts on that, Tyler?
The big one, I think, is Roman. Not that Poch is going to be Greg Berhalter, but I just looked it up quickly. You know, there were three goalkeepers in the 2022 squad. I think some teams might play it a little bit more fast and loose, but it's just funny. Before that, and I know Cincinnati fans are going to hate the next words that come out of my mouth, but I kind of had Patrick Schulte ahead of him and Roman not, you know, really in the mix anymore. Just that was the vibe that I got, not by speaking to anybody, just, you know, seeing the selections recently. So that implies that there is opportunity for him. And I think that that's probably a really nice surprise. I mean, is that surprising to you? I could be way off there. I personally was not expecting that one.
Yeah. He was in this is his sixth call up now. It's kind of been somewhat regular the last few. He got injured in the September one. I think it was September one last year. But he was called in November. I just think that goalkeeping spot is still kind of up. Like, there's just a lot of questions there.
I think one and two are very settled. I think for sure Matt Freeze. I think Matt Turner, you know, very, very safe backup. But yeah, that third, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm interrupting.
I guess the surprising thing is that Tony Jimenez, the goalkeeping coach for the U.S. team, was at the New England game. Watching Matt Turner and Roman Celentano, it was a good game for him to go to, and it was not Roman's best game. So I'm guessing by then they probably already knew they were going to call him in, but maybe that played into his performance. Maybe he knew that he was there, and maybe that, you know, nerves got to him, like putting too much pressure on himself. Who knows? It's a great opportunity for him. You know, I did talk with Miles Robinson, and he's just excited to, like, this is the last international window before the World Cup. That roster will be named May 26th is when they're going to announce it. So this is really a big opportunity for everyone that gets called in to kind of, I mean, they'll be obviously watching what players are doing in league play between now and then, now in May. But it's a chance to, you know, make their case and put their best foot forward and trying to make that World Cup team. So good for all those guys. The other thing I should note is Ender Ekinike, probably should have mentioned this from the jump, because there's a lot of talk about Ender right now. He did get invited to Venezuela's national team. I think they're playing in Uzbekistan or I forget where. Am I even making up a country?
Uzbekistan. Okay.
That doesn't sound right. He got invited and couldn't go because of his visa situation. He is basically on a one-time entry visa, so he could come to the United States, but if he leaves, he can't get back in. So he could not even go home during the off season. He had to decline another call up because of that. And he couldn't go to the Dominican Republic for CONCACAF Champions Cup first round. I did confirm today and was able to talk with Pat Noonan about it as well, that he is able to go to Mexico and he can go to Canada. So it doesn't apply. The situation doesn't apply to North America. He can travel in and out of Mexico and Canada for, you know, MLS games in Canada. Tigres on Thursday. So he will be able to go down to Monterrey, and that's good news for FC Cincinnati. And I know there were a lot of questions about that, so I'm glad I was able to confirm that today, and no one has to wonder if he's on the trip.
That's great news for them. And then great news for everybody. that's what I'm going to put it. But we have a little bit of news of our own. We have a live show coming up on April 1st at The Pitch, famously right at the doorstep of TQL Stadium, where we'll be doing, I think I just said, a live show. and I saw the flyer said like a live Q&A. That will rely on you, the listener, to be there. So hopefully you can join us. Let us know if you're coming. We'll have to prepare It's still early on, so like we'll have something good for you. But yeah, let us know. You know, if you're listening and that's something that you're into, let us know if we should expect you, and we'll work on the setup and make it worth your while.
Yeah, and if it goes well, and by well, attended well, and then people seem interested in what we're talking about, then you know maybe we can make it a regular thing. But we do appreciate the pitch. Like, just shout out to them for, you know, they reached out to me trying to see what we could do, and I'm glad we were able to put something together. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, them being right across from TQL Stadium, like local establishments like the pitch need support. You know, it's tough time sometimes during the week. I know it's hard, but to get out. But if you can get on down there, it is no joke on April Fool's April 1st. We would love to see you guys there. And yeah, we're happy to chat with the fans and see where we can go with it and maybe make it into a regular thing, like I said. So mark that on your calendar, 7 p.m. at the pitch, April 1st. And yeah, if you guys are listening through audio format, I do want to remind you guys, we are on YouTube. So if you have not subscribed or, you know, liked our shows on there, please do so. It's youtube.com/@QueenCityPress. And hopefully you guys are enjoying our content so far. And we are happy to have another week with you guys. So thanks for listening, and I think that's it. Maybe I should come back to you, Tyler. Anything before I wrap us up?
Nothing I can think of. Just another crazy week, another two match week. So yeah, listener, let us know if we missed anything. If you're this far in and you have commentary on it, we really appreciate it. So just let us know what you think. I'm enjoying doing this, and yeah, so.
All right. Well, yeah. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next week.